you may not have realised, but the Tour de France started last night. On Friday, the National Sports Museum opened an exhibit about the Tour de France, which runs until December 20th. Now, it's taught me a thing or two, because I thought that Australia had only been involved in the Tour de France for maybe, you know, 20, 30 years. Well, how wrong I was. In 1914, Don Kirkham and Snowy Munro, great names, earned the right to race in the Tour. And then a public appeal was launched to send Australian cyclists to the Tour in 1928, and then again in 1952. And I am lucky enough to have one of the Australian cyclists who competed in both the 1952 and the 1955 Tour de France, Mr. John Beazley Sr., with me. John, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much. Pleasure to be here.
Now, John, your family have owned a bike shop, to the best of my knowledge, since 1919. Mm-hmm. So biking is clearly in the family.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Who taught you to ride a bike?
Oh, my dad.
Yeah.
He actually built it as well, you know.
Oh, that's fantastic.
A little 16-inch wheel, fixed wheel bike, you know, and I used to race around on that.
Did he teach you at home or around the shop? Because I imagine he was at the shop a lot.
Yeah, around the street, you know, I learned to ride, yeah, yeah.
And how old were you?
Oh, I'd be about four-year-old.
Right. Now, the Sporting Globe newspaper started a campaign to send you, Eddie Smith, Peter Anthony and Dean Whitehorn to the Tour de France.
Yes.
To the 1952 Tour de France.
That's correct.
Why did they pick the four of you?
Well, it was selected on performances during that 1951 year of cycling, and I happened to win the Australian road title that year and the Melbourne to Wangaratta, and of course that put me in good stead to be up there as one of the selections.
The Melbourne to Wangaratta in 1951 wouldn't have been the easiest of races, would it?
No, it certainly wasn't, but because it went the long way round. It didn't go up the highway.
Right.
It was about 179 miles in those days, you know, up the back way through, I can't think of the name of the places now, but it came onto the main highway at Benalla.
Right.
Yeah, and...
And now, out of the four who were sent to the 1952 Tour de France, you were by far you were youngest, weren't you? You were 21.
I was the youngest of them. Yes, yeah.
And can you tell me a bit about Eddie Smith, Peter Anthony, and Dean Whitehorn?
Yes, they're all good bike riders in their day, but they couldn't seem to handle the type of racing Eddie Smith could. But Dean Whitehorn and Peter Anthony seemed to be lost, you know. It's a different style of racing to what we were used to over here in Australia.
Oh, so that's the racing in France that you're talking about.
Yeah, right. over in France.
Because you all went to France on the boat.
Yeah, that's
which
right.
Took 5 weeks. How do you train for bike racing on a boat?
Well, we went over on the Orcades and we each had a set of rollers to which we thought we'd be training on, you know, every day there. But after a while, we got a bit of a sway on the ship, and the ball bearings used to come out of the rollers, and we used to be chasing them around the deck, you know. So we gave that idea away after a while.
So what did you do to keep fit?
Well, there happened to be a lot of women on the boat, and they formed a fitness club, and they asked us if we'd like to join them, you know, so we did. So we could get fit by doing exercises and a lot of walking.
And so after 5 weeks, you arrive in France.
Mm-hmm.
You hadn't been overseas before
not before, no.
What was it like when you first arrived in France? Because you're not only in a completely foreign country, you've had 5 weeks off with no biking.
Yeah.
And you're about to go and compete in the Tour de France.
Yeah. Well, the Tour de France, we arrived over there about the end of March, and the Tour de France was to start around about early July. So we had a bit of time to try and get ourselves fit, you know, but what we found hard was racing early racing amongst all the others. We couldn't understand what they were talking about or anything like that. Yeah, so we were quite lost.
So you hadn't spent any time on the boat learning a bit of French?
No, no. We tried to, but our French wasn't very good.
Now, the bike that you were riding, had you made that?
It was made by my father, yeah. He was a frame builder in our shop in Footscray that we had. You know, he built it for us. But of course, unbeknown to us, our manager, Gino Bambagiotti, had arranged for a friend of his who had a bike shop in Nice there called Urago Cycles. So we finished up by riding Urago cycle bikes.
Oh, okay. So you didn't ride the bike that your dad had made for you?
No.
Oh,
no.
Did you tell him that?
Yeah.
Because I imagine he would have been incredibly proud knowing that you had going over to France.
Oh, he certainly was.
And racing on a bike that he made.
Yes, no doubt. Yes, yeah.
I am speaking with John Beasley Sr., who competed in the Tour de France in both 1952 and 1955, and is the oldest living Australian to compete in the Tour de France. Now, both times you rode in the Tour, you were a member of the Luxembourg team.
That's right, yes.
How did you come to be chosen to race for Luxembourg?
Well, Luxembourg are only a very small country, and they didn't have enough good bike riders to fill up a complete team, which was 10 riders in those days. And so I happened to be selected by the French Cycling Federation to be a member of their team, you know, which consisted of a German and a Spanish rider.
Oh, okay.
As well.
Now, what were the trials like to get into the Luxembourg team?
Well, you had to perform well during the year, and I happened to be performing the best of the Australians at the time, and I was selected by these people on my form to race in the Tour de France, yes.
Now, one thing I've always been amazed by watching the Tour de France and watching any bike races, particularly in Europe, is how close the spectators get to the riders. Was it the same in 52 and 55?
Oh, yes, it's the same. You know, it's such a big sport over there, and the people treat it like we treat a grand final here, you know.
Yeah.
They're all way in with it, you know, and that. But and all along the road, all through the towns, you'll see them all lined along there, you know, and especially up the mountain climbs. They really crowd in, and there's only room for one rider to get between them.
Well, that's the thing. Are you so focused on what you're doing that you don't see them, or is it incredibly intimidating that those people are all around?
No, it doesn't intimidate you. You're just focused on what you're doing, you know, especially when you're climbing a mountain, because it's not too easy.
Now, mountains were your specialty, weren't they?
Yes, they were, yes.
This is another thing that interests me. How do you find out that mountains are your specialty? Are you riding one day and you're riding up a mountain, you get to the top and you go, oh, I liked that?
No, you just can't become a mountain rider just by saying. You've got to train quite a lot in them, which I did. I used to ride my bike from Footscray out to Ferntree Gully 3 times a week, and I used to train around there. I had a little 30-kilometre circuit around there that they used to come round and have these hills there to climb every time, you know. And I used to drag myself home then. I'd be pretty tired.
I am speaking with John Beasley Sr., who competed in the Tour de France in 1952 and 1955. Now, you were competing in the Tour de France with your idol, Fausto Coppi.
Fausto Coppi, yes.
And you got to race with him. He was in the Luxembourg team, was
no,
he?
Oh, no, he wasn't? No, he was in the Italian team.
Oh, but you got to race a lot. Well, you got to race in the
race
with
him.
Yeah,
yes,
against him.
Yeah.
And also with a guy called Charlie Gall.
Charlie Gall was in the Luxembourg team. Yeah, he was a great hill climber.
Can you tell us about those two blokes and what it was like and how exciting it was for you being in a race with them?
Well, Fausto Coppi was always my favourite, you know, because I used to read about him and his exploits and that, never thinking that one day I'd be racing against him, you know, over there. But he was a very thin, tallish person, you know, and he could ride unpaced along the road for mile after mile at 40 kilometres an hour without losing any pace, you know.
Now,
he was such a strong bloke, and he could climb the mountains just as well.
Now, what does unpaced mean? Is that without any other bikes around?
That's right, on your own, without any other bike riders, you know.
Oh, okay.
And he used to win a lot of his bike races that way, by breaking away and riding away from the bunch.
Wow. And Charlie Gall?
Charlie Gall was typically a hill climber. He didn't ride very well on the flat much to win stages, but he was a wonderful rider in the mountains. He was a small chap. He'd only be about 5 foot three, of fin build, but he was like a mountain goat climbing the mountains.
So he was in the Luxembourg team with
you.
He
was in the Luxembourg team,
and you were a mountain climber as well. What did you learn off him, riding with him in the Luxembourg team?
Well, I learned to try and go faster.
That's a pretty good lesson. Did he give you any advice?
Well, I didn't speak French very much, and he didn't speak much English.
Right.
So we had a bit of trouble communicating, you know. But
so it was just
I learned just by watching him, you know. Yes.
Now, unfortunately, you had to pull out of the 1952 tour. Why was that?
I had an attack of the boils.
Oh, may I inquire whereabouts?
We call them in cycling saddle boils. They're there's no head on them. They're blind, but they form under the skin, you know. And I had them actually before I started in the tour, and they didn't get any better, you know. And I finally got to a stage that I couldn't even sit on the saddle.
So there's nothing you can do about them apart from rest?
No, that's right, yeah.
So you came back to Australia?
Yes, I came back to Australia on the Orchides again, yeah.
What did you tell people when people said, oh, I haven't seen you for a while, where have you been? And you told them you had been racing in the Tour de France?
Yeah, that's right, yes.
What did people say? Was there any awareness in Australia of it?
Oh, yes.
Oh,
quite a lot. People were amazed that I'd been riding in the Tour de France, you know. And because it was always advertised, it's such a great race, you know.
Oh, okay.
And naturally, anyone connected with bikes knew about it, you know. Yeah.
And I suppose, were you working in the bike shop?
Yes, I was working in the bike shop.
Oh, okay, yeah. So you're in the best place because everyone coming in will know about it and know. And I imagine there were posters for the Tour de France all over the shop.
There was a few.
Now, so you went back again, you paid for yourself and went back again in 1955.
That's right, yeah.
And had to pull out again.
Yes, yeah. I wasn't really fit enough, really, to ride at this time. I teamed up with Russell Mockridge, who I met over there.
Yeah.
He was racing over there on the track, and he decided to have a go at the road. And so we teamed up, and we were both a member of the Luxembourg team again.
And how long into the race did you get? Did you have an accident?
No. I punctured one day, and I had no support to chase the bunch again.
Right.
Had to chase it on my own. And I came in outside the time they allowed for the after the winner's time.
You know,
a percentage of the winner's time. So I was eliminated from the race, yeah.
I am speaking with Mr. John Beasley, who is an Australian cyclist who competed in the 1952 and 1955 Tour de France and is the oldest living Australian to compete in the Tour de France. Did you have... When I see bike accidents on television,
mm-hmm.
they just look awful because there's no protection. I mean, you can wear a helmet, but did you have many accidents while you were riding the tour?
Oh, yes, yeah. I went over the side of a mountain once, you know, and but luckily I wasn't hurt, apart from bits of flesh off here and there, you know, but we used to regard that as nothing, but no broken bones. So you were all right again, you know.
Now, what did you wear? There wouldn't have been lycra and things like that. What were you wearing? Was it wool?
Woolen jumpers in those days and woolen necks, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all you had to protect you, yeah.
It would have kept you a bit warm though, wouldn't it?
Oh, yes, it would, yeah. Which was handy at times because it used to get... up near the top of some of those mountains, it used to get pretty cool.
Now, your son has continued the family tradition because you worked with the Australian National Cycling Team, didn't you?
Yes, that's right.
And your son is the coach of the Malaysian National Cycling Team.
That's correct.
Now, does he live there or does he go back and forth?
No, he coaches them here in Australia.
Yeah.
That was the stipulation that he made when he applied for the coaching job in Malaysia and that they granted it to him, you know, that he coach him in Australia. He put a good story forward because he told them that they're in a country that has plenty of racing and that's a thing that would get them fit, you know.
Exactly. You must be proud.
Yeah, I'm very proud of him, my word.
Do you give him advice?
Well, or he listens, but I don't think he takes much notice of it.
Well, good on him for listening, though.
Yeah.
When you watch the tour on TV now, what are your thoughts when you're watching it?
I think of the times I used to ride it over there and how I felt, and I feel for all these young riders who are riding it for the first time because it's a real experience, you know. It's racing. It's a type of race that's entirely different. It's a race that sort of stops and starts all the time. And I used to think they were sprinting, but that they were just going hard, you know.
Actually, on that, when you were lining up for your first start in the 1952 Tour de France, mm-hmm. were you thinking anything? Were you just so excited and you were just going,
no.
I'm here?
No, I was excited.
Yeah.
No doubt about it, because it was a lifelong dream of mine to one day I might compete in the Tour de France, you know, because ours was always a cycling family, you know. My two brothers, Vin and Klinker, raced here in Australia as well, you know, and of course... cycling was bred into us. My father was a good cyclist, so naturally the sport I'd take on would be cycling.
Well, now someone called in, and this will be my final question, and wanted to know if you knew Sir Hubert Opperman.
Opperman.
Yeah. Now he raced in the 28... Did he go over in 1928 and race in the Tour?
Yes, he did. Yes, that's right.
And did you know him through racing?
I knew of him because his racing had finished, of course, well before I'd started. But he lived at Geelong, and we had the bike shop in Footscray, and he was a good friend of my father's who raced with him and against him, you know. And, of course, he always used to call in the shop and have a word with Dad, and I was always there. And that's how I came to meet him. And he offered us advice, you know, which we took on board, you know, because he did such a great cyclist.
Well, John Beasley, thank you so much for coming in. It was a great pleasure to meet you and to speak with you. And I might bump into you at the exhibit about the Tour de France at the National Sports Museum, which opened on the 1st of July and goes through to December the 20th. Enjoy watching the tour this year and... yeah, again, lovely to meet you.
With a pleasure.
That was Mr. John Beasley, a senior